Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. How are you? This is the first warm day in several days. So, of course, it's raining. But, hey, I think the cold is broken, and I now have pneumonia. And other than that, everything's cool. And Abe isn't with me today, so it's just you and me, babe. Yep, it is talk radio here on KBOO, 90.7 FM dial. My name's Joe Uris. We want to talk. I've got so many topics. They're drizzling out of my ears. Like I say, I've got pneumonia. All right, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. Talk radio, 231-8187. I'm going to run down my topics of the day, and I'm going to explain why I've chosen them, and I'm going to talk a little bit about some of them and suggest to you a primary notion, which is not a new one, not one that I haven't visited or Abe hasn't visited or many others haven't visited, but it's really a strange truth. And this truth is that we really have become two nations. How to explain this? One nation, which is not a new thing. I mean, it's not a new phenomenon, nor is it a new discovery, but it is a terrible truth. One nation believes, for example, that the universe is only 10,000 years old. That same nation believes that George W. Bush is doing an excellent job as president. The interesting thing is the two seem to coincide so much. One nation believes that Guantanamo Bay, Gitmo prison camp is a violation of human rights. The other nation believes that, hey, it's okay because these are terrorists. One nation believes that Dick Cheney is running things and is the real president of the United States and is very creepy. The other nation believes that he's a patriot, Dick Cheney, that is, and is not running things. It's really George W. Bush. One nation is concerned about the war in Iraq, seeing it as poorly planned, poorly executed, begun with lies and deceits, and drawing us ever nearer to a region-wide, worldwide collapse. The other nation sees it as a continuing and important struggle for freedom and for the bringing of democracy to the rest of the world. Two nations, one based on arcane, I have to say, and weird ideas of faith, and the other more rational, but perhaps more liberal. Both nations coexisting in the same nation state, and neither able to have an effective dialogue with the other. And I'm not sure that dialogue could ever exist. I'm not sure it's even possible. And this is a great tragedy in America. We have polls that show, by the way, that in both nations, George W. Bush's popularity is slipping. At this point, it's fair to say, according to Zogby polls, that that Bush is weakest among the demographic groups that have comprised the heart of his political base over the 5 years. This is the weakest he's ever been. Bush's best performance in the South, it gives him only 45% positive ratings, and in the West, where he gets a 43% approval rating. Of course, he's weakest in the East and in industrial areas of the nation. Now, consider that. Consider that he's become weak at his base. But it doesn't matter, because all he and his cohort have to do is put the fear in their base and the fear in the rest of us. Democrats, Republicans in Congress become paralyzed, roll over, and give him essentially what he wants, whether or not it's a wise thing. Let's go to some of the issues and look at what exactly is going on. First of all, the ports of the United States are now being sold to the United Arab Emirates. That's right, the port facilities are being sold to investor companies based in the United Arab Emirates, including Dubai. This is a story out of the New York Times, and it to me is a great indicator of exactly how duplicitous this administration is. To sell to the United Arab Emirates, to sell to the communities from which many Islamic fundamentalists come, the port facilities of the United States, of cities like New York and Baltimore, seems to me on the face of it strange, particularly by a nationalist party, the Republican Party. The contradiction, though, goes unnoted by most analysts and unnoted by most Americans. Then, that's just one. Then, there's Guantanamo Bay. We now know from numerous sources, including an excellent article by Marie Coco in today's Oregonia, of the true nature of Guantanamo Bay. Did you know, and probably you did, but maybe not, that prisoners there who went on a hunger strike were strapped down in chairs, tubes shoved down their throats for each meal, for each feeding, until their spirits were broken? Did you know that the United States engages in the use of sensory deprivation? I mean, you actually see the pictures, may not realize it. Now that prisoners are automatically hooded and their mouths taped closed and all senses removed from them, that is part of the process which the CIA and others believe can break down a person's resistance and ability to differentiate their own thought from others within 48 hours. This is the great breakthrough of our technology. Unfortunately for us or for them, it's also a process that involves incredible discomfort. There is evidence that the government has used as proof in the Guantanamo Bay, as to the so-called enemy combatants, the most dangerous of the dangerous, the most vicious of the vicious. You know, you've heard the administration. There's increasing evidence that a lot of these people end up in Gitmo because they have enemies within their own countries who want to see them out of the way. Only 7% of detainees actually were captured by the U.S. and coalition forces. The rest were rounded up, for example, by the Pakistani authorities, by the Afghan Northern Alliance, or by other militias and armed groups, some of whom apparently were paid bounties to hand these people over. And there's no process, which guarantees their release in any time at all. In other words, Guantanamo Bay, Gitmo, will last for the duration of this regime in the United States, and no hope of release. And the most amazing story today on the front page of the New York Times. All this, I think, fits together in a certain way. It turns out that many documents in the National Archives have been reclassified under the Bush administration. You know, this is the National Archives. This is the stuff that historians and social scientists use to understand exactly what has happened in our past. The reclassification process has included documents, for example, from the 1950s, in which the CIA predicted, rather foolishly, that the Chinese communists would not enter the Korean War. 80% of these documents have been reclassified under the Bush administration. That is, in the last few years. And once they're reclassified, they are not accessible. They're pulled off the shelves of the archives. They disappear. Now, where they go, you don't know. Are they kept? Are they simply shredded? Are they burned? Are they turned into, digital secrets? But if you're a historian or someone who's trying to understand American history or trying to understand American culture, those documents are now gone. This reclassification process is underway. This is consistent with the Bush administration's resistance to giving people information under the Freedom of Information Act or under many, many other rules. And one of the great truths of a fascist regime, if you read 1984, of any totalitarian regime, if you've read 1984, you understand. If you've read any of the literature of totalitarianism, you understand when history disappears, when names are erased, you're living in a place like the place run by Joe Stalin. You know, in Russia during the Stalinist era, the National Encyclopedia would regularly send out to people who'd subscribe to it new pages. They would be told to cut out page 372 to 375, and those pages would be replaced by a new article. Whole names, whole careers, whole individuals, sometimes in the armed forces, sometimes heroes of the people, sometimes great men or women, they would be disappeared, literally, non-persons. And we, so far, at a very kind of simplistic way, are starting that process in our own country. But this is part of that slippery slope toward absolute control of information. It's terrifying, but real. So, we're selling our ports, we've got Guantanamo going on, we got the disappearance of documents that were unclassified for years, going back to the 1950s, that suddenly disappear. And all of this is happening in a context of a frightening lack of true patriotism on the part of this administration. For example, a letter to the Oregonian pointing out that the new Bush, budget essentially is going to get rid of money for traumatic brain injuries that happened to our troops in the course of fighting the Iraq War. A huge percentage of the injuries that take place in that war, combat injuries, are brain injuries. But the money for dealing with those injuries is being disappeared. And that's for real. Now, on a more positive note, there's an excellent letter in today's Oregonian by Randy Leonard, one of our city commissioners. Praise to Randy. Pointing out that the Portland General Electric Company's distorted information about rates is exactly that, grossly distorted. And that, in fact, if you compare PGE rates to other rates, even in the city of Portland for electricity, it turns out PGE rates are higher. We live in a time more than any time in my memory in which truth is erased by fictions. And the factoids that are presented to us by our own government are gross distortions or total outright lies. It's gotten to the point where we can't even have an ordinary hunting accident. Remember Dick Cheney's disaster, where the government simply comes forward in the most immediate way and says, oh, you know, this bad thing happened and we're tending to it and we're really sorry about it and all that. In fact, speaking of Sovietization, did you notice how the victim of the hunting accident apologized for getting shot? I mean, if you remember the old Soviet system, you would see somebody propped up in a suit that was deliberately made too small for him. He would confess his crimes, which were non-crimes, and he would become a person who is a non-person, and he would be sentenced to death or disappearance in some gulag somewhere. Well, you know, the good victim here doesn't disappear. He stays a good contributor to the Republican Party. He apologizes to the nation and to the vice president for having gotten himself shot. How different is that? So, we have a whole host of patterns, of indicators of just how bad things are going. And I am interested in hearing your notions on this. The issue that I would like you to focus in on, the one I want you to think about the most, is how do we cross the brain barrier from what most of our listeners believe, and many of you may disagree with me, and I welcome your calls. I want to be clear about this. I really want to hear from people who totally think I'm full of it. How do we cross that great divide between what I'm asserting is the case and what I know to be true and what some of you may believe to be true? And I want to see if it's possible that there can be, I'm not talking about a meeting, I'm not talking about a compromise here, but some way to cut across that absolute barrier and how that can be approached. Because, in fact, it's two nations, neither of which talks to the other, both of which have incredibly different belief systems about the nature of democracy, about what's going on in Iraq, about what the war on terror is all about the situation in Latin America. You name the issue. We are so separated, so divided, and so unable to have a reasonable discourse. The difficulty, again, is not just that we are separated, but that I don't think it's possible that either side can come to the conclusion without a great aha experience that the opposite side is correct in any dimension. And I don't know what to do with that. And I don't know how to deal with that. And I do know that this country is very much threatened by these kinds of realities. Recently, I saw that the administration may allow Congress to create a new law to vote on the question of the secrets, the great number of secrets, the secret listenings to people's conversations and so on, may create a new law on that issue because they're confident that they have the votes in Congress. Now, that would legitimize what's being done illegitimately by the Bush administration. By the way, things that could actually result in the impeachment of the president if anyone really cared. But they're going to get a law passed. Now, can they get that law passed? Probably. Can they get a Supreme Court that wants to go their way? Probably. Will that make what they do any more right? No. But it will legitimize their patterns. So it is a real threat, the real difficult situation. And again, remember, in 2006 we have congressional elections. Already we have gerrymandering by the Republicans that has put them in the driver's seat of Congress. Is it possible for this process to be reversed? Is there, in short, a possibility of the restoration of at least some level of representative democracy throughout the United States? And again, can we reach out? Can we be talking to those who have no understanding or no belief in what we say or we in what they say? 231-8187 is the number to call. Comments, suggestions, reactions, revulsions, whatever, are really welcome. Let's go out to LJ. Hi, LJ.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I'm good.
All right. Joe?
Yeah?
Napoleon called it divide and conquer.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Now, when the propaganda machine cranks out the stuff that people actually believe on 30-second sound bites on TV,
right,
and don't bother to read and don't bother to simply address the facts, not politically, Joe. I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about the facts as they're laid out.
Okay.
How can you possibly have any kind of dialogue?
Well, that's part of the problem for sure. Maybe the major part of the problem.
Joe Friday on Badge 714 said, "The facts, ma'am."
Just the facts, ma'am. Right.
Just the facts, ma'am. Okay.
Right.
Now, my belief is that 9/11 was used as a metaphor for the how can I put this nicely, Joe? For the perpetrators of the coup d'etat who took over the American government.
As a metaphor or as an excuse?
As an excuse.
Okay.
Okay. As an excuse to tighten things up. If you look at history, Joe, Hitler blew up the Reichstag in order to justify his fascist takeover. He killed his own people, right? He did it. And everybody knows that he's a liar.
Well, wait, the Reichstag was burned down. I don't know how many people were killed.
All right. Burned down. Yes, there were people that were killed in the Reichstag.
Okay.
All right. Number two, let's look at the battleship Maine, Joe. Remember the battleship Maine?
Oh, well, not actually personally, but I have read about the battleship Maine.
Uh-huh. The battleship Maine was blown up in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
All right? By the Teddy Roosevelt boys. As an excuse to start the Spanish American.
Well, I don't want to quibble, but I don't think anyone's sure about that. It could have simply been a boiler explosion and then used as an excuse to suggest that the Spanish were responsible.
Okay, yeah. And anyway, the excuse was that the Spanish were responsible.
Right.
Right. So in the meantime, that started the Spanish American War, and the benefit to the government of the United States of America was Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines. Right?
Right.
Okay. So, we really need to take a cold, hard look at what's factual, and we have to separate factual from propaganda.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think I understand where you're going. I personally do not believe it is necessary or even important to demonstrate, as some people want to, that there was a vast conspiracy to around 9/11, either to allow it to happen or to actually make it happen.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist,
okay.
Though.
But I think I do agree with your point. Once these events take place, by whatever means, they become very useful instruments to frighten the people and to persuade them that all bets are off and that our customary freedoms can now be abrogated.
Yeah, what really I feel ironical about 9/11, on September 10th, nobody had any facts. On September 11th, George was sitting in a kindergarten reading a kindergarten book upside down. Right?
Was he really? Was it really upside down?
I swear it was upside down.
Oh, okay.
If I'm lying, I'm dying, John.
Okay, man.
All right. And he was sitting there, right?
Yes.
All right. The planes hit the Twin Towers.
Right.
There was no way that the Twin Towers could have collapsed just by the impact of those airplanes.
Okay, see what...
I'm sorry. All right.
I disagree with that. Right there, I don't want to get into this issue because I don't think it's... My point was that it's not crucial to my point of view. But I have to say to you that having looked at the engineering of the buildings and having remembered how poorly built they were from the very beginning, I think it's entirely possible that they collapsed from that.
Explain Building 7.
Well, I can't explain Building 7.
Okay,
a lot of things I can't explain.
Okay, thank you very, very much. All right. Okay, so like, no matter who did it, that's moot, all right?
Yes.
The facts are that 9/11 was used as a metaphor for the cabal to take over.
I certainly agree that 9/11 gave them the opportunity to take over.
Okay.
No argument here.
Okay, Joe, have a great day.
Take care, man.
Okay, you too, bud.
All right. 231-8187. I'm saying we're two nations. I don't hear much from, and this is unfortunate, people who are intelligent or even not particularly intelligent conservatives. I don't get those calls. This station kind of is progressive radio, which almost by definition excludes that audience. And I would like to change that. I would like to have rational discourse with people who are 180 degrees away from my position on these various issues. But let me reiterate. We are talking about the concept of us, of two nations. But we're talking about the fact that the Bush, and these are facts, the traumatic brain injury monies in, are just being disappeared from the new budget when most of the injuries that are significant in Iraq are frequently head injuries. We're talking about Gitmo, that's Guantanamo Bay, where prisoners are held indefinitely, where there's often no evidence, where they never get a trial, where they never get heard, where they get tortured if they resist, you know, and so on. We're talking about a situation where, we're going to sell the ports, port operations in the United States to member states of the United Arab Emirates, notably Dubai, etc. We're talking about the disappearance of classified documents going back to the 1950s, specifically to 1950 in the Korean War, for example. We're talking about the distortions of fact that appear in the Oregonian every day locally. Thank goodness for Randy Leonard, a city councilman with whom I've often disagreed, but whom I really respect, who talks about the fact that PGE electric rates are in fact higher than other local electric rates. We're talking about the whole, what do you want to call it, the whole ball of wax in which lie, distortion, creepiness, has now taken over, in which sound bites dominate news, in which, in fact, most of us are unable to make a discernment between that which is a made-up fiction and that which is a harsh reality. And I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you on the ideas you have to deal with this problem. I'm not so interested, though you certainly can call them in, on hearing your conspiracy theories, because I think they're pretty irrelevant to the situation we're in. 231-8187. Julie, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I liked your ideas about two nations, and that made me think about, you asked, how can we communicate?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, well, whenever there's a time where people can't really communicate, what happens? And I was thinking, okay, when a young man and a young woman are together, they're two nations. The young man is thinking about one thing, young woman is thinking about something totally different. And when they're talking, they may not be actually communicating. So sometimes you say, well, does it matter? Is it one person gets their way or the other person gets their way, or they go home thinking, well, at least I made a start or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The men are from Mars, the women are from Venus, kind of a thing.
Yes.
So what do you do? Another aspect is, for instance, cultural people, where you have to take lessons. You don't extend your right hand in greeting, for instance, in some cultures. Okay, you have to learn how to communicate with other people just because you start from such very different bases.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there needs to be some kind of way to learn, because otherwise what I find is I just don't hear what the other person's saying.
Well, what you're suggesting, if I understand it, would be some kind of maybe even formal cross-cultural communication training or something like that. How to talk to a Christian, right-wing Christian fundamentalist?
Maybe.
Maybe. What an interesting idea. Well, you might take such a course, but how do you, seriously, how do you bridge a gap where, in fact, I'm talking about facts now, somebody believes something that is factually not true? How do you deal with counterfactual notions of the universe?
That's, again, when you talk about the women and men thing.
That's a different problem.
Yes, but in a way it might be the same, because you're talking to somebody who doesn't even see you the same way
mm-hmm.
that you see yourself. And that could be the situation in these two countries.
Let me think a little bit about that. I want to thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
All right, 231-8187. Are we simply in cultures that are different, not around facts, but around belief? Or do we actually face the question of what is real, that is, you know, concrete, and that which is, mythic? Or actually false. 231-8187. Chris, you're on the line.
Yeah, I thought I'd comment on if you don't give other people, the same weight and value as yourself. I mean, talking about diversity, I'm talking acknowledge other people's importance in the world and the community. It's hard to, take time to explain to them, with enough detail so they can understand your position.
So you think the strategy should begin with honoring their position, sort of?
Yeah, I mean, I think what, the Bush administration has done is created a whole new class of minorities and seemed like, doesn't take time to explain to the average citizen, what's behind a lot of their policies. And I think it's just kind of this tough guy bullying attitude, which translates into the rest of the world just seeing us as doing whatever we want to do, not only with the rest of the world, but with our own people and all the way down to the smallest guy standing on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So until, both sides can somehow agree that, look, we've got to stop this stonewalling bullying and share the information and treat everybody with the same amount of dignity and respect, we're never going to get to a point where we can, at least feel like we had a say in the matter.
Well, I appreciate your point, but here's my problem. And this is, this is becoming increasingly a fact even amongst those who support the president, which is to say, objectively, the war in Iraq goes on and on and on with no objective point of success. I mean, you never know. Maybe the whole thing will implode and we'll be triumphant in some manner. But it's obvious that we have a plan to build, I've heard 14, but certainly a number of bases there. It's obvious that there's an issue of oil and control of oil involved. It's obvious that a variety of things are happening in this administration that even right-wingers, even conservatives, even Christian fundamentalists are becoming increasingly dissatisfied with. In fact, right now, the most positive ratings for the President of the United States in the areas like the South where he is most beloved are below 50%, considerably below 50%. So I think what happens in reality is exactly that. Reality begins to intrude on the belief system. The process must be accompanied, though, with a careful and continued assertion of truth and the meaning of that truth. And that's one of the things that is very difficult to accomplish.
I agree. I think that it is clear he's got big ideas. Everybody's got big ideas, and in a perfect world, you could change the course of history, but the harsh realities are coming to grips with that, and maybe it's just going to be an interesting next 5-10 years before something shakes out. But it would be nice to know for sure what the real motivations are behind these people's decisions.
Well, we can see signs of their motivations. I think that they are short-term thinkers, and I think they're in a profound form of denial. For example, we now are clear. I think everyone is pretty clear that global warming is not just a natural phenomenon, but in fact a human-induced phenomenon, and that it's moving much more rapidly than anybody had previously thought. If the President of the United States, and here I'm going to steal a concept from Paul Krugman's article, I think it was yesterday or the day before in the New York Times, the concept of a mensch. If you're a real man, if you're a real mensch, and by the way, it's not sex, woman or man, if you're a mensch, you honor the fact that you can make a mistake and you say, oops, sorry about that. We're going to have to change course because I or we were wrong. This administration is incapable of acknowledging error. They didn't make any mistakes in the route to the war in Iraq. They haven't made any mistake. I mean, in fact, Cheney initially said, hey, his people said he didn't make any mistake in shooting this guy. It was the guy's fault because he stepped in front of a weapon. Finally, Cheney acknowledges the wrongness. The first mensch-like behavior on the part of Cheney that I have ever seen. But in the course of that, they get the guy who got shot to get up and say, oh, it was all my fault, I'm so sorry, create trouble. So we have a failure of any of these people to be mensches, to acknowledge responsibility for error and to change their policies or their attitudes or their behavior or their beliefs or their words in favor of truth.
That's right, and I think you're absolutely right. It comes back to what's one person's capital in themselves. How do you arrive at having a storehouse of influence and power, able to bring about change? Well, you can't hold that all yourself. It has to be distributed amongst all the people, so all the people somehow come to an agreement on a direction and a path. And, you know, can you facilitate that? You know, can you make a mistake? Yes, you can, because I have a history of making good decisions up till this point, and we all work together on this anyways. So, you know, democracy is a messy thing.
That's
you know,
true.
And the president is it's just this whole culture of this shoving stuff through a knot hole that we're all just, you know, a piece of wood in the wall, and it's, we're all just getting tired of it.
Well, yeah, and in fact, as I say, the inability to make acknowledge, as a true man does, as a mensch does, error. In fact, one of the things that characterizes fascist regimes in the past, the Hitlerian regime, the Soviet regime, a lot of these kind of totalitarian regimes, is the fact that they are incompetently run, and that
right. The
leadership, because it doesn't allow criticism, and it doesn't allow for example, bureaucratic systems that are relatively neutral to operate agencies, they make one screw up after another. And we're seeing that right now in this administration, for example, the Katrina disaster, where, in fact, things go terribly wrong, and they cannot admit it. They
right.
cannot acknowledge the root causes of the problem, and they continue on the same path after the problem has been revealed.
Yeah, and it's on and on. They can't even articulate the complexities of what happened, even to a point where we can all get some idea that maybe something better is going to come out of this. You know, it's whether it's Katrina, our foreign policy. Condoleezza Rice can't even explain what the issue is between some of these countries, let alone to the people that are there, let alone to this country, so any of us get an idea that somebody's in control of the situation.
Right, because they're operating in a fictitive or a fantasy world. Their world, and this goes back to my point about two nations, their world has nothing or very little a point of contact with the world of reality. So they create this mythic system which feeds into other people's mythic systems, makes those people who believe this sort of thing comfortable, even as the real world goes to hell in a handbasket.
That's right. It's just like any business CEO that just takes a company and just drives it into the ground because they've got some, you know, illusion about grandeur on how this thing's going to be huge, and everybody's looking around going, hey, you know, we've got some brick and mortar over here we need to put in place. And,
right.
You know, none of these guys have any experience with building companies, running businesses. I mean, businesses that were successful.
Well, that I don't know, but let me give others an opportunity, okay?
Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you. 231-8187. Who do we got next? Pat, you're on the air. Hi, Pat.
Go Ducks, go!
Oh, it's that guy. It's the duck guy. What a strange career he's made for himself. Who do we got that really wants to talk?
Me.
Ah, it's the pig farmer. How are ya?
Pretty good, man.
You haven't called me in a while.
Well, I've been like, you know, this cold deal here, packing water and whatnot, kind of takes all my energy to do that.
I can understand that.
And, like, I'm just kind of getting, you know, redundant fart, so, you know, God, I hope fart don't get you kicked off.
All right, well, don't say it more than once.
Anyway, I got my standard thing, you know, pray for the rapture, get the bastards out of here. That's that.
You want the rapture?
Yeah, you get all them deviants out of here.
Well, I'm scared of the rapture because I think I'm going to see a lot of ugly naked people floating up.
Well, so long as they're going up, that's fine. And then the other thing is, there's a new bit. I don't know if you heard this or not, but this is true. I take this paper called the Capital Press. The editorial content's a little bizarre, but the news is pretty good in it. Anyway, the latest thing is they want to raise chickens here, kill them here, then ship them to China to finish processing them, then ship them back.
And that's cheaper than locally grown chicken?
Apparently so. I mean, they're talking like for soup and kind of suing. They're talking like for canned stuff. I mean, I don't know if a chicken would make it that long fresh. I think it'd be a little bit on a ripe side time I got back, you know. But there's been a big write up the last 2 weeks about, well, basically the farmers are against it, which they should be, because, you know, how do you know it's your chicken?
Right.
And all
Boy, talk about the chickens coming home. Talk about the chickens coming home to roost.
Woo. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the other thing is the majority of the people. Oh, yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about was nobody ever gives Mussolini credit for fascism.
Well, let me be one of the first to acknowledge the stark reality of Mussolini. In fact, you probably know this, but many people may not. The kind of leadership that Mussolini had is much admired even today in Italy. and there are people who are muttering, oh, we need a strong leader like Mussolini. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he never went away, even though he was shot and so on.
Right, right. And I think old Adolf kind of picked up a few tips from him, too. And you see, I'm Italian, so I kind of gravitate toward him. If this country was going to go fascist, I think this Mussolini had nicer-looking uniforms. His helmets were a little nicer and stuff like that. Of course, that's that Italian design thing, you know. So, and I just think the majority of Americans just don't care enough to do nothing about nothing no-how. So.
Well, that brings up, actually, the last point brings up an important part of this two-nations business. When I talk about these two nations, I'm talking about people who do care. The vast majority of Americans are so busy worrying about the nut, the day-to-day making it, and their own personal lives, and they're being entertained to death by their television and so on, that they actually pay very little attention to the stuff that disturbs you or I. And I think that in that situation, it's very possible for fascism to take over, and most people are not oppressed or don't feel oppressed at all because none of the issues that would make them feel put upon would bother them. When you have a volunteer army, when you have a social structure such as ours, even as healthcare diminishes, even as the cost of living rises, particularly for poorer people, even as housing becomes more and more scarce or unaffordable, all these things are not put in a larger context or perspective, so they are perceived as personal problems having nothing to do with the larger perspective. And that's what's going on in this country for most people.
I agree, and the reason they get sucked into that nuts is because, by the time most people are 23 or 4, they got 3 or 4 kids to feed, and they got the big Chevy to pay for and a house in the suburbs and all that rigmarole. And I don't know how you're ever going to get kids. I know a lot of the kids I talk to, because my girlfriend's kid's about 16, and some of his buddies have been coming over. And that's one thing I really tell them, don't be going out and starting to have them babies before you've even haired over good, because then you might as well just shoot yourself in the head because you're done. Okay, I got one little quote from Hitler, and then I'm going to go.
Okay.
What good fortune for governments that people do not think. There you have it.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye.
I'm one of my favorite callers, the pig farmer. This is KBOO, 90.7 on the FM dial. It's Talk Radio with me, Joe Uris. I'm alone today. Abe is not with us. The number to call, 231-8187. The issue, two nations divided, a vast sea of people in the middle who are totally disconnected from any of the issues that I find important. And when I talk about two nations, I'm talking about one which has a fictional view of the world. The universe is 10,000 years old. Global warming is not a problem, except if it is, it's apocalyptic and God wants it. That kind of thinking versus a kind of scientific worldview, looking at things as they are. 231-8187. Hey, Sasha, you're on the air.
Hello, Joe. I wanted to tell you about something that's happening right now, barely as we speak.
Okay.
On the corner of 160th. And TV Highway, directly across from one of the few mosques in the Portland metro area.
Mm-hmm.
The military is having an exercise posted in bright daylight. They have about 15 deuce and a half. They've quartered off the street and they've stopped the train.
Wait a minute, let me get this straight. The military is holding an exercise near a mosque right now?
You got it.
I wonder why.
Well, golly gosh, they got a little white bus with tinted windows.
Is it, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Is it an exercise or is it an actual action? Do you know?
It says the big sign says posted military exercise. Haven't gone over there to challenge them.
Oh, well, I wouldn't go over and challenge them. they got the guns.
The little guys with the guns walking around, I think maybe they got bullets in them.
Well, how close to the mosque? I mean, I don't know anything about the location of mosques or anything like that. How close to a mosque is this?
Less than half a block.
So do you think it's like, at the very least, an intimidation? Is that what you're trying to suggest?
I'm suggesting these things, that what I can see is what I have to go on.
Mm-hmm.
The road is closed. It says military exercise.
TV Highway is closed.
No. The road directly running beside it, part of that. So
okay.
There used to be a park and ride there that runs along a railroad track.
Okay.
They've commandeered that area.
Okay.
So it's not interfering with any public transit. There are people going by probably don't even realize, except there's a bunch of trucks down there they don't normally see.
Uh-huh.
A bunch of military communication vehicles, the little white bus with the tinted windows,
mm-hmm.
Deuce and a half, that sort of thing, posted military exercise. It's been going on now for about 12 hours. They started last night.
I know nothing of this. This is very interesting. I hope somebody who does know something will call us and explain. But I'm really grateful to you for telling us.
I mean, it's kind of odd that in suburban America we have a military exercise going on there.
No, I think it's very peculiar and it's very interesting.
I mean, you know, maybe there... I'm not a conspiracist in the way that I don't think there's a, so to speak, a communist end over Andrew Bush, but I do think there are things going on both within and without which are dangerous to the American public.
Well, I appreciate the call, and, you know, I'll try to look into it after I get off the air. Watch those kids. They sound like they're getting into the paint.
Bye.
All right, thanks for the call. Hey, you know what? Abe, my partner, is on the line. Should we go to him? Yeah, let's give him an opportunity. Hi, Abe.
Oh, hey, Joe.
What's up?
It's this whole working for a living thing, you know?
I understand. I forgive you for working for a living.
I wish I could forgive myself.
Well, hey, we can't all be rich and powerful, Abe.
I know. I just want to let you know that, you know, this weekend when you were backing your car out of the driveway and you ran over me and sent me to the emergency room?
When I did what?
When you ran over me with your car. I just wanted to tell you that I'm sorry for walking in your driveway.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, you got blood all over the underside of my undercarriage of my car.
Oh man, I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I think you owe America an apology because so much attention was paid to it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, America, for walking in the path of Joe's car.
Right, I of course don't feel any guilt for not looking behind me.
Of course not.
No, it's your fault for being there.
Of course it is.
Yeah. I think remember our line: Cheney shot a guy.
Cheney shot a guy.
The next line, of course, is naturally because Cheney is a dick.
For a whole bunch of reasons, yeah.
All right. Is that it?
No, it's not it. Actually, Senator Roberts of Kansas is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. We've talked about him before.
Yes.
Or he's the guy who kicked the Iraq pre-war intelligence issue down the road past the 2004 election.
Right.
And then said that the American people are over it and he's not going to investigate.
Right.
Well, the other last week, he was about to gavel into session a committee meeting on the question of President Bush's illegal wiretaps.
Uh-huh.
But he didn't do it.
No.
He adjourned the meeting. He's also been talking to other members of the Senate and members of the House about passing legislation that would revamp the FISA law to essentially make what President Bush did legal. And then, of course, he wouldn't need to hold those hearings because... you know, whatever happened would have actually turned out to be legal.
Do you think the Congress of the United States would actually pass such a law?
Yeah, I think they would.
So pretty soon, everything they did in the past, which was illegal, which was actionable, which violated our rights, will be perfectly okay?
Yeah, that's exactly. Perfectly okay.
You're depressing me again.
Think how handy this is going to be, though. They have something you might have done wrong. You know, pretty soon it won't be illegal anymore.
So if this is a pattern, the new administration that will come in 2008 can pass a law making everything that they do illegal retroactively legal.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Yes.
Okay.
It's brilliant.
It is brilliant. It is depressing.
Yeah.
What do you think of my concept of two nations?
I think it's right on the money.
Okay.
And bridging that gap, I think it's going to be difficult, if not impossible.
Well, you know... realism has its place, but
not on this radio.
Not on this radio station. We still have hope.
All right. Well, you know, keep up the good work, and I'll be back with you next week.
Is that a promise?
Yeah, it's a promise.
We're going to have Melanie Sloan next week.
Yes, we are.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
That's Abe, my erstwhile radio partner, who's playing hooky by earning a living. We are shocked and dismayed by that reality. 231-8187 is the number to call. Two nations. This is the question. What do you do to bridge that gap? Is it too intellectual a question? Too difficult to contemplate? The issues, the specific issues that I've delved into very briefly, the fact is that at Guantanamo, prisoners are being held without any real evidence. Nobody in America, at least not enough people in America, seem upset about that, despite the fact that Bush's ratings all over the nation, including the areas where he's strongest, have fallen below, in some cases, below 45%. He continues to exert an enormous force and apparent popularity. He runs ahead. He keeps on going. It's hard to stop him because, essentially, he plays upon our fears, not our hopes. There is increasing criticism of the intention of the ports of America, particularly on the East Coast, New York and Baltimore and so on, being taken over by an Arab entity who would run it and who would, of course, run it in the interest of the United States. It's a nice way to raise some money. There's the fact that the new budget is actually going to do away with the trauma brain centers, which are the most common injuries out of Iraq. That's how we pay back our veterans who give their all. That we have classified documents now being removed from the shelves of the National Archives, going back as far as the 1950s. The CIA being one of the principal removers, the Defense Intelligence Agency being the other. They don't want to have anything in there, apparently, that ends up in any way indicating failures of intelligence or indicating that they made any mistakes anywhere. This goes immediately into the notion of Menschlichkeit, that is the notion of being a man or a woman and standing up and admitting that you've made a mistake and changing course, despite the fact that it may cost you something in the way of how sharp you look. I've also brought up the issue, which I think is important, of the electrical rates in Portland. The fact that Randy Leonard, one of our city councilmen, with whom I often disagree, has made clear the fact that PGE rates are higher locally than other utilities, despite the propaganda from PGE. These are issues that are very, very rare. And I want to add another one. Not very rare, pardon me, very serious. I want to add another issue. The notion of open primaries. You know, this is a big push by the Oregonian and by others, some of them would-be liberals, who argue that we are too divided, politics is too divisive. Let's have open primaries so the Democrats could vote for Republicans and Republicans for Democrats in the primaries. Let me just suggest one thing to you. Anyone who is aware of the possibility of an intentional campaign, a conspiracy, if you will, can destroy the integrity of either of the two already limited political parties by crossing over. We need a closed primary system in which people declare their support for a political party and then are allowed to vote in that primary. When you give that up, you're giving it up. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to give it up. You still get to vote in the general election. So all those issues, a whole heap, a smelly heap of facts and problems for you to call us about. 231-8187. Paul, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I really love listening to true conservative radio here.
I think I am a conservative, actually.
Yeah, so am I.
I want to conserve American democracy.
A couple of things, kind of quick. I heard on National Pentagon Radio last week they were having a discussion about Guantanamo. And
wait, National what?
National Pentagon Radio, isn't that it?
Oh, okay.
And they were saying that the people who are holding the detainees have these files, like from 6 to 20 pages on each person.
Mm-hmm.
And a Baltimore law school got to study these.
Ah.
And half or less of the people that are held there as detainees, even the military believes that they are in any way a combatant.
So essentially they can't let them go because it would be too embarrassing, or what?
Yeah, I really think that's it. And then the other thing is, you brought up a really interesting point a little bit ago about fact and counterfact of two people who disagree.
Uh-huh.
Well, see, I think that's the function of the old pendulum.
Explain what you mean there.
You know how the pendulum swings?
I know how a pendulum swings.
And so what happens in our society is this effort of inertia against momentum and that kind of thing. And I think it's these facts, like the fact that the people in Guantanamo have no reason to even be there. As people come to realize this is the truth, it kind of helps the pendulum move. And as you say, these approval ratings are falling off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see that is our reinforcement that we can see that the pendulum is swinging.
So you figure we're going to move towards some kind of what, liberal or left perspective out of the right-wing one, or what?
I don't know. Maybe a reasonable someday, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of hard to believe we'll ever get to someplace really great. But part of that point is, see, the last people to ever change their minds are the ones who are solely operating on dogmatic
principles.
Yes, and that's the people who have decided that we can't release the people in Guantanamo at any cost. It's the people who are tapping our phones and so when you get to this disagreement with a person,
mm-hmm,
that you just can't agree on, see, those are the people who are going to be the very last ones to ever see the light of day. And by then, by the time they've finally admitted that, okay, you're right about global warming, the pendulum will have swung so far that it's probably going to start going the other way.
Well, maybe, but by the time these people are admitting the problem of global warming is real, we'll be all drowning.
Yeah, but by that time, 95% of the people will already have been working to
change
to ameliorate the situation.
Well, I hope you're right. I'm not a big fan of pendulum swing theories. I do, and I also disagree with, for example, Karl Marx, who always argued that history was essentially progressive, that is, moved in a positive direction. I don't think either of those is true. I think those are mystical ideas. I think what is true is that things happen for a variety of reasons, having to do with struggles among interest groups and the powerful and the less powerful who try to become powerful, and that ultimately human beings create enormous crises that go beyond the question of human societies and into the world of the environment. And we're at one of those stages right now where, unfortunately, if we, all of us humans, don't get a little more, bit more wisdom, we're gonna make things impossible for human beings.
Well, I see that the future, we're going to have to devote our entire science and economic efforts to fixing this mess. So I agree with you. If there is a pendulum theory at play, it's going to have to really get to work in a hurry. So,
okay. Well, listen, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, 231-8187. I'll take a deep breath here and review some of this material because I think it's very, very important. The piece in today's Oregonian by Marie Coco, columnist, evidence, I'm going to quote her, evidence the government used as proof that someone was an enemy combatant included associating with unnamed individuals or groups purported to have terrorist ties, you know, guilt by association if ever there was some, or possessing a rifle, possessing a Casio watch, or wearing olive drab clothing. Now, any of those, of course, would make you a terrorist in the eyes of the government, apparently, if you're out of Afghanistan or some similar place. Only 7% of detainees, these are all quotes, actually were captured by U.S. and coalition forces. The rest were rounded up by Pakistani authorities, by the Afghan Northern Alliance, or by other militias and armed groups, some of whom apparently were paid bounties for handing over men alleged to be terrorists. So, essentially, you know, you could be in the wrong place at the wrong time and end up at Gitmo and never get out. And if you protest it by, for example, doing what a bunch of the people there tried to do with a hunger strike, you will be strapped to a chair, your mouth will be pried open, a tube will be shoved down your throat. By the way, the same tube used sequentially prisoner by prisoner, and you will be force-fed. And if you vomit, then it's force-fed again, and on and on and on until you essentially collapse. There is also increasing evidence that we're using torture. Particularly sensory deprivation together with other forms of torture to elicit information and cooperation out of prisoners. And then, of course, on the other side of the coin, there's the decision of the U.S. government essentially to sell the operation of port authorities throughout the United States to Arab entities, particularly to the United Arab Emirates and to Dubai. Those are a little bit disturbing. Then there's the failure of this administration to ever, under any circumstances, acknowledge it was anything like wrong on any issue, which is just, to me, amazing. They're unmensch-like behaviors. Paul Krugman talks about this in the last couple, 3 days in articles published in various newspapers. And then the disappearance of classified documents. The fact that the National Archives, huge numbers of documents are disappearing, some of them going back to the 1950s. For example, documents talking about the fact that the CIA, well, actually CIA documents asserting that there was going to be no Chinese communist entrance into the war in Korea, which turned out to be total malarkey. You know, stuff like that. Anything embarrassing to the government, disappeared, gone from sight. 231-8187. Let's go to John. John, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hey, Joe, what do you know? Do you know where that quote comes from?
No.
It's from Jolton Joe DiMaggio. It's for a song from the 1940s.
Oh, hey, Joe, what do you know?
Exactly, Jolton Joe DiMaggio. But oh, yeah. What I'd like to suggest to everybody is that read a little bit of Roman history and they can get a good line on what's going on here. Because,
how so? How so? Explain.
Okay. My feeling is that we really don't have much left of democracy because the corporate world, which in the Roman world, there were large entities, when they went to the Latifundia, you know, when they took Egypt, started producing all their grain overseas, drove the Roman middle classes into the Colosseum, basically destroyed the what we would call the middle class, kind of the upper peasant class in Rome.
Okay.
And then you ended up with these very rich people. They were individuals rather than corporations, basically fixing markets, holding grain off the market to cause famines, all the kind of stuff we see today that's corporate behavior was done in the Roman world. There are a couple good books about it. There's one that talks about how they deforested the Mediterranean and completely degraded the late Greek Alexandrian empires, and the Romans took all the forests out of the Mediterranean. They're all at the bottom because they built these fleets, destroyed each other, and completely ruined the ecosystem that used to exist there.
Mm-hmm.
We're just in that world now, and so the next stage to be looking for is the military coup, which will be actually a step forward, because the military actually has values that are closer to the American people, unfortunately, than the political structure, which is all ruled by corporations. The corporations are no longer Americans.
So you think are you actually predicting a military coup for the United States?
Not yet, but I think in the next 50 years that will be the next stage. After the giant capitalist structure, because basically we have no borders left.
Mm-hmm.
We have, in other words, we're an imperial entity, and the people who rule this country are no longer really Americans. They no longer, just like the thing with Dubai, they no longer, their loyalties are more familial and feudal. And people don't often think about it in that way. I mean, feudal is a funny word, because it usually comes in later, after an empire collapses.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, these people are loyal to their families, and their families are intermarried. You know, it's like with other groups, with Europeans, They're an international group, and they think they're going to rule the whole world. But
well, now, didn't I see the current President Bush holding hands with one of the Saudi princes?
Well, sure. And, I mean, I'm not suggesting they're having a relationship, but...
Just friendship. Nothing wrong with guy-to-guy friendship.
But it gets to a point where the international elite has more in common with each other than they do with their own people.
Ah, I see.
So, in other words, we'd rather take the jet to Paris and hang out there, you know. And someone like Schwarzenegger is a good example of that, or you know, the movie star syndrome. So that you know, you basically have nothing in common with the guys who used to work down at the auto plant, who are now probably the fathers of speed dealers. You know what I'm saying? The whole methadrine thing, the whole dope thing in this country is just tied to the fact that the job structure's collapsed.
Well, I don't know about the earlier point, but I certainly agree with that last point. That is, I think the epidemic of meth and so on really is tied to the collapse of legitimate family wage jobs in America, and that's being ignored by the people who are concerned about the drugs and the drug war.
Yeah, there was a big article in yesterday's New York Times about a lady on an Indian reservation who became this major dope dealer, and how she did it to pull herself out of poverty, and the fact that she was destroying the lives of those around her. It was tangential, you know, and this is going on everywhere. Nike, the boys right here at Nike were the premier guys to do that, which is you ship the jobs overseas, you sell the sneakers for $100 to the kids on the street. Kids have got to get the $100, so what do?
I see the pattern you're talking about, and I understand your argument. I also have some agreement with you. I don't think history repeats itself, or is even parallel, but I do see the pattern here of a certain level of imperialness in America's direction.
The repetition is not exact. It's just a structural form that tends to happen. In other words, we've got a situation now where they're trying to create a professional army, which, of course, is not on the British model, and, of course, they don't know how to operate that, because you can't do that without allies. The British always had continental allies. I mean, we've gone into the heart of Eurasia now with this, these small numbers of troops, and we're getting our butt kicked because we don't know how to operate, you know. And so they're going to go to some other model, and the next model, which will be coming up, and I just want you to look for that, is to have troops that are mainly foreigners. In other words, we're going to have Latinos, people will be granted citizenship to serve in the United States Armed Forces, and they're already starting with that model because they won't be able to get people from here. So, you know, it's like you're from Guatemala, you want to be an American citizen, you join up, and then you have an army which is even more disconnected from the people, and that's the point at which the army decides, oh, we don't look like these guys, why don't we just take over?
I take your point. I think it's an interesting idea, and it's entirely possible, certainly, that the army will end up being essentially a foreign mercenary force.
Well, and at some point they turn around and look around and realize they've got the guns, and they're related to each other and not to the people that they're protecting, supposedly.
I want to give others an
opportunity. This is just long-term speculation.
No, it's interesting,
enjoy.
And I appreciate the call, man.
All right, you take care now.
Okay, 231-8187. This is Joe Uris. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. We're talking about the notion of two nations. We're talking about the direction America's going. We're talking about the holding of prisoners at Guantanamo, that many of whom are absolutely innocent, but by now are probably pretty pissed off. We're talking about how the government new budget is the Bush budget is essentially not going to take care of the traumatic brain injuries of the people who are fighting in Iraq. The concept of a volunteer army, the notion that the present administration lacks Menschlichkeit, that is, that they aren't men who can stand up and admit they're wrong, and the disappearance of classified documents. And even kudos to Randy Leonard on our city council, who points out how PGE rates are, in fact, higher than many other local utility rates. Coming up on KBOO at 9, and between the covers, the guest is Stephen Elliott, editor of Stumbling and Raging, an anthology of politically inspired fiction by some of today's best writers. At 9:30, we'll check with Phyllis Johansson about Spay Day USA in Oregon. And that will be followed by Environment and Human Well-Being, a talk by award-winning scientist Jane Lubchenco, who teaches at Oregon State University. At 10:30 on Stage and Studio, hear about the intelligent design of Jenny Chow at Portland Center Stage, and later Damal Io's street performance as she panhandles for reparations in Living Flag. At 11, Democracy Now!, remembering Malcolm X on the 41st anniversary of his assassination. 231-8187, Talk Radio with me, Joe Uris. Who we got? Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Thanks for a great discussion. Truth forever on the scaffold and wrong forever on the throne. But it's that truth that's going to win, that's going to determine the future. In your interview with Richard Perle, he seemed to insist that solidarity means that the countries will join with us.
Yeah, that's the mythology that he and his New Age Republicans definitely embrace.
So the Bush cabal really doesn't like the game. They don't really like bipartisanship. They don't really like sharing power or admitting their fallibility.
Right.
Two examples of the manipulation of reality were the buying of or the selling of articles to Iraq newspapers, the good news people, you know.
Oh, right. I believe that's still going on. Essentially, we have a whole propaganda operation, which is outsourced. It's private companies who essentially gather news or make up news and then either pay to have it planted or effectively planted in foreign newspapers, creating the sense that things are going much better than they perhaps are in places like Iraq.
Yes.
Now, for the U.S., anyway.
There was an article in the Washington Post entitled Bush's Social Security Sleight of the Hand, which the writer points out that on page 321 of the budget proposal, the privatization costs are listed.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bush has, secretively inserted his private accounts into the budget, and it's going to cost $712 billion.
$712 billion?
Beginning in 2010. That's over 7 years.
Uh-huh.
It's really a small amount of the the basic benefit that's going to be turned over to private accounts, but it's really very sinister. I live in a state of rage, which is not a happy state, you know, a state
that's
of
that's just north of Oregon, isn't it, the state of rage?
State of rage, yes. Yeah. And I'm always hoping, of course, that reality or crisis can bring new priorities, that somehow we can be one away from this right of the stronger, this law of the jungle,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is just as preposterous as the conservatives refusing to see reality as complex and uncertain.
Well, they're all looking for the state of grace. And unfortunately, I agree with you. We are not just feeling the state of rage, but we're feeling, and this is the dangerous part, the sin of despair. We all have to continue struggling and have to keep putting out the truth. Particularly, and I wanted to get to this and haven't really, we, all of us, have an obligation to speak truth to power. And we have to do it everywhere and anywhere that the opportunity presents itself. We can't be didactic, though. We've got to be honest, sincere, straightforward, and avoid kind of the hackneyed language of ideology. Not that we shouldn't be ideological. And I think we have to do that soon, and we have to do that everywhere. You know, earlier I'd argued for writing on the streets, using chalk, putting up posters, talking on the air, talking anywhere, everywhere, all the time. And I think that you don't know, you will never know, we cannot know the point at which the tipping point is reached. So if there's to be social change, if there's to be improvement, if humankind is to survive in an ecologically sound universe, it's up to us to make it happen. If we simply walk away or be silent, we are complicit. And this is the greatest single point that I wanted to make today.
And the alternative to systemic structural criticism is scapegoating.
Right, which we cannot indulge in either.
Yes, yes.
I want to thank you for the call, man.
Thank you.
231-8187. Who we got?
The Good Sugar Stuff.
Hi, Leah, how are you?
Hi, Joe. This is Leah. Good morning.
Hi, Leah.
I want to respond to the... one of the men who called in about the Roman Empire.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, I went to listen to a Central Lutheran Church to a woman by the name of Barbara Rossing, who's written a book called The Rapture Exposed.
Mm.
And she talked about the Book of Revelation, and she's a PhD, Harvard Seminary, a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay.
What she said was that the Revelation is written about the Roman Empire.
Ah.
And she laid it out. It was this incredible expose. But she said she laid out the corporation, how it was going, the army, the mercenaries. The parallels between them and us are appalling.
Really?
And amazing.
Hmm.
But she said, the neocons take this and do all this stuff with the rapture. The thing is, they don't go to the last chapter. And the last chapter is about... That's the hope. That's where the dream comes true. That's where we see what the world is supposed to be like, and that's what we're supposed to work for. It puts a whole new light on what Jesus was talking about.
So let me just recap. What you're saying is this woman, Barbara Rossing, is that it?
Yes, Barbara Rossing.
Okay, who's a scholar.
Yes.
Talking about the Book of Revelations, about the whole question of the rapture. She argues that it's actually historically in the context of the late Roman Empire.
Well, yes, and she based on her scholarly research, and she said yes, that's what it is. It's what John is talking about.
So he's criticizing the state of the empire.
Yeah, he's criticizing the economic system, the religious. What it's saying is, you know, you can't be a part of this. So a lot of the things that we're talking about today, we're dealing with the economic system, the political system, you know, economics, jobs, entertainment, the Colosseum. The whole bit is exactly what John was saying, what Jesus was addressing at that time.
Interesting.
And the last chapter is about, okay, so this is what you're dealing with, and here's where you want to go.
Ah.
Here's what the dream is. Here's what we want to focus on. Not on all this other stuff. And the neocons take this and just deal with the rapture.
Well, I don't know much about the Book of Revelations. I read it once, I think, in my life, and looked at it a few other times. But what I do understand about the way in which the Bible is used by fundamentalists and by the politically motivated of that school of that ilk, is that they essentially choose chapter and verse to suit their and to support their positions.
Yes. Yes,
they are not whole Bible readers.
No, she said they pick and choose. And she said the word Armageddon is only mentioned one time, and it's in the whole book it's about a place. But she said they go through and they pick and choose stuff, and she lays out how they've done it,
mm-hmm.
and how it works, and how we buy it. And she says even in divinity school, she said she had never read the whole book of Revelation.
Really?
Nobody does. She says nobody. They read the good parts, or the really hellfire, damnation, the apocalypse stuff, and they never get to the other piece. And her teacher for her PhD said, you need to read this whole book. And he said it to her because she wanted to go into ecology.
Mm.
And he said, you need to read the book of Revelation. So she tied it to ecology, to the Palestinian stuff that's going on, to the Arab world. It's amazing. It was great. It was a whole day, and it was free, and her book's available at Powell's. It's $15. I'm gonna read it.
Okay, what's the name of the book?
It's called Rapture Exposed.
Okay.
And it's by Barbara Rossing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I think we all need to be aware of this.
Well, it's useful. Cool. It's useful to have ammunition to respond to the ignorant.
By the way, your idea about writing on the sidewalks?
Yes.
I'm gonna be doing that this year.
That's
I've
great.
I've already got my chalk, and I'm really hoping lots of people are gonna get out there with me.
I think so. I think that we need to all of us be more visible in our anger and our protest and our hope and our visions.
Yeah.
Anyway, it sounds like you're rattling the pots and pans there.
Yes, I am. I've got my granddaughter home from school. She's sick today, so.
Okay.
Well,
I hope she
later.
Gets better. Thanks a lot for the call.
Okay. Bye.
231-8187. Who do we got? Bob. Hey, Bob. You're on the air. Oh no! It's that guy. It's this weird. I don't know. Duckhead. All right, 231-8187 is the number. 231-8187. James.
Good morning.
Good morning, James. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good.
That's good.
I had to comment on the caller a couple callers ago who said that we conservatives refuse to see how complex the world is.
Okay. Great. I'm glad you called. Go ahead.
And that is very true. I mean, the world is far more complex than we humans can even begin to grasp.
Uh-huh.
And for us to attempt to micromanagement, I see as insanity.
Okay. And therefore?
Therefore, all of these attempts to manage the economy and, social engineering are you guys are very uptight control freaks and need to let go of all this insane, control issues. Yeah.
Well, how do you really, given that you feel that way, how do you relate to the plans for the war on terror and the Bush administration's war in Iraq and so on?
Well, see, Bush is fighting a liberal war. A conservative would go over there and just completely annihilate everyone.
Ah.
It would just be over. The war would have already been over, but he's trying to be the kinder, gentler, liberal war.
Ah.
He needs to go over there and fight for like a conservative, like John Wayne. Go over there, kill them all, and take the oil and screw them.
It's the paved paradise to put in a parking lot approach.
Well, it's all sand over there. It doesn't matter.
Oh, okay, man. okay. I imagine we have a lot of people who want to respond to that.
All right, bye.
All right, thanks for the call. I'm not sure if he's just funning me. 231-8187. Miles?
Yes.
How are you? You're on the air.
Good. Hey, did you get an answer, figure out why Bush and Chertoff want to sell the port?
Well, it has to do with money.
Yeah, you think so?
Well, what do you think?
That's part of it. That is part of it. The way I figured out, they look at it, two possibilities.
Okay.
Port gets sold to the United Arab Emirates, and long-term, nothing happens. Bush and Chertoff are right.
Uh-huh.
Everybody says, hey, you guys are right. Second possibility, something happens. Terrorist action happens. What happens? They tighten security. They maybe even seize the port. Suddenly we have all our ports. They don't. They win there. So they look at it as a win-win situation, a chance to get the ports free if things do happen, tighten security, and basically keep, you know, funneling money to Halliburton, et cetera, and all the security people, or things won't happen, in which case they'll say, hey, see, things didn't happen. I don't know. It's kind of like the reason why they let 9/11 happen. Basically, they said, well, we know these guys might try to steal a plane. Let's just see how far they get.
Huh, that's an interesting idea. I think, of course, the primary reason for doing this is the short-term money that it will yield to the administration that's running up enormous national debt. Now, what is interesting to me is, whatever your position, Michael Chertoff, Secretary of Homeland Security, on Sunday on this week said on ABC that it's just perfectly cool to let the Dubai world ports world operate our ports. Which I find to be, I mean, here's the head of the Homeland Security saying, don't worry, the Arabs will guard our ports as well as anybody could. It seems to me, just as a naive American, that if there's anything you want to have secure in your own interest would be the ports of your home country. And that would imply to me that you didn't sell them off to a private entity that has no real basic and fundamental loyalty to the United States or to the United States government. Or to the people of the United States.
Absolutely, Joe. And they don't even inspect it. They acknowledge they don't inspect all the containers coming in. They only inspect between 2 and 5%.
Well, and to me, all of this is very, very strange because these guys are so short-term in their thinking that if, in fact, and I believe there is, a real danger of some kind of an attack on the United States in the foreseeable future, certainly containerized cargo is a wonderful opportunity. Likewise, land transportation, you know, is another opportunity. I just don't think that they're serious. I think that they don't give a damn about things, except that they maintain power through the use of intimidation and fear, aggression and militarization, and the loss of civil liberties and civil rights.
Right, and like I mentioned, either way they win.
I take your point. I think it's a good one. Thanks a lot for the call, man.
Sure, bye.
231-8187. This is Talk Radio. This is KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. My partner, Abe Proctor, is away doing work for money. We do want to hear from you. The issues. First of all, Guantanamo Bay and the increasing evidence the prisoners there are not only deprived of their rights, but may have been brought there by opportunists opposed to one faction or another. The increasing evidence that the new administration budget is going to screw over all kinds of Americans, including veterans who have brain injuries out of the Iraq war. The fact that this administration cannot ever admit it's wrong. They are never men. They are never mensches who can stand up and acknowledge errors. The selling of ports. The disappearance of classified documents from the National Archives, which, of course, suits the purposes of the current administration. And a lonely item that doesn't seem to be picked up on by many of you, the fact that Randy Leonard has a nice letter to the editor pointing out that Portland General Electric rates are higher, locally speaking, than many, many others. All of these and more are the topics we have to deal with today. And let's go to our next caller. Chris, you're on the air, 231-8187.
Good morning. I wanted to speak to two issues that have been brought up this morning.
Sure.
Scapegoating and not admitting errors and vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the enemy is us as much as...
Can you get a little closer to the phone because I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yeah, how about this?
That's much better.
So, scapegoating and not admitting errors and our own vulnerabilities, and the enemy is us.
Uh-huh.
Because as much as the government is doing these things, we living in this country, being brought up in this country, do things in the same culture as the government. Evidence of this is the repeated ceremonial disgracing and putting aside of the linkage woman who calls in about the Rockefellers.
Mm-hmm.
Talk show hosts conveniently cannot address her, so they either hang up on her or relegate her, as Peter did yesterday, to, okay, what is your answer to the question? Or where are your sources of, what are your sources of information?
Well, I know nothing of this, so I...
You've heard her for years. And my point is that as much as we say the government does this, we do it too. She is a canary in the mine, and she embarrasses us for our own progressive views of thinking we're doing all right, and we do wrong. And I think we ought to admit and engage, or at least investigate what she's talking about, instead of hanging up on her and putting the blame on her as if she's the scapegoat.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. I'm it's probably someone who calls me often, but I'm not following all this, because I really honestly do not get to hear the show every day all the time.
Oh, she doesn't just call your show. She calls, you know, everybody's show who's the talk show host.
Okay.
And
all right.
It's just the issue of don't put the blame on the messenger.
I gotcha.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. 231-8187. Estes, you're on the air.
Great. So the question was, two nations, one country, how do we bridge the divide?
Yes.
Okay. A new political party, calling it the Justice Party.
Okay.
Now, we have the Republicans have their elephant, and the Democrats have their donkey, and the Justice Party has an eagle.
Ah.
Okay.
All right.
I have for you the Justice Party dream team. Now, this is a cabinet, all right?
Oh, you've got it all set up. Okay, who's your dream team?
Well, okay, we've got Barack Obama. He's going to be the VP.
Okay.
All right, and this list here is David Letterman style.
Okay.
Okay. Going to start with Farm Bureau Chief, Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner is in charge of the farming. Okay.
Okay.
Agriculture.
Susan Sarandon.
Wait a minute, Susan Sarandon is what?
Under Chief of the Farm Bureau.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you know, you usually have like a secretary and an undersecretary.
Sure.
So, okay, Foreign Policy Director, Noam Chomsky. Under Director, Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
Okay, FEMA Director, Tommy Franks.
All right.
Secretary to FEMA, Hillary Clinton. Ambassador to Nigeria, Russell Simmons. Ambassador to Ethiopia, Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Ambassador to Israel, Bill O'Reilly. Ambassador to Palestine, Saddam Hussein. Ambassador to Great Britain, Michael Jackson.
Where's Bill Cosby in all this?
Ambassador to France, Tom Cruise. Ambassador to Iran, Al Gore. Secretary to the Interior Department, Dennis Kucinich.
Okay.
With Undersecretary Morgan Freeman. NSA Director, Ralph Nader.
Okay, I think I get the idea, man.
Okay, good. Thank
all right.
you.
Thanks a lot for the call. 231-8187. The dream team of the new Justice Department. Not New Justice Party, pardon me. You know, years ago there were third-party candidates running on a peace and justice platform, and I think that one of the things that is going to become increasingly important in American politics is the arrival of third parties. But remember that our system of government is structured, first of all, around the idea of not having political parties at all, and secondarily, since very early in our history, of having two political parties, both of which are centrist, who drift more or less to the right or left, but who always are not that different and are simply access routes to power. And this is one of the fundamental problems of our kind of democracy. I think I've said this before, but we are one of the earliest, we are actually the earliest modern Republican democracy, and as such, our system is the first, but it is not necessarily the best. I think that structurally we need a change toward a parliamentary system. I think we need to allow any group that gets 5% of the vote to sit in the parliament. I think that the government should change when there's a vote of no confidence out of that parliament, and the executive branch should be made much, much weaker. 231-8187. Taking a deep breath. Do we have other callers? I suspect we do. Perhaps. I can't Hell. All right. Okay. Here, we're back in business. Ed, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe. Good show. Hey, Philadelphia, nuclear target for Bush? Too many things there, man. Too many things that are good, you know? Like they got the Philadelphia Navy Yard and Frankfurt Arsenal. They got an international airport there. It's a hub for transportation and communications. If you nuke it, you split the eastern seaboard in half, all land connections and stuff.
So you're positing that Bush would like that
to
happen?
Hey, is Bush selling enriched uranium to the Iranians under the table already? Because that is their MO, Iran-Contra, you know?
Uh-huh.
You demonize a country, you make something illegal, and then you sell it to them, man.
On that note, we have to end the show. A good little hit of paranoia right at the end is always good. This is Joe Uris wishing you a good day. Stay tuned to incredible programming on KBOO, listener-supported radio, 90.7 on your FM dial. Remember to keep on keeping on and writing on the sidewalk.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Welcome to the Tuesday Morning Radio Zine. First on Between the Covers, the guest is Stephen Elliott, author of Stumbling and Raging, an anthology of politically inspired fiction by some of today's best writers. At 9:30, we'll check in with Phyllis Johansson about Spay Day USA in Oregon. That will be followed by Environment and Human Well-Being, a talk by award-winning scientist Jane Lubchenco, who teaches at Oregon State University. At 10:30 on stage and studio, hear about the intelligent design of Jenny Chow at Portland Center Stage and later Damali Ayo's street performance as she panhandles for reparations in Living Flag. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, remembering Malcolm X on the 41st anniversary of his assassination. Now let's go to Between the Covers.